Come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Welcome. Today we're going to be talking about seniors and gratitude. In aging, one faces a narrowing of physical capacities, losses of loved ones, and the looming mystery of death. Not to be overly pessimistic, but I think that's the reality. These conditions can engender grief, loneliness, and despair. Gratitude, when practiced intentionally, which is hugely difficult, and we'll talk about that, becomes a counter-narrative to decline. It's not denial, but a reframing that can reveal grace within limitation. So, a regular expression of gratitude can reduce symptoms of depression, theoretically, if you can get to it and do it, improve sleep, foster generally a more resilient outlook. Gratitude helps to sustain emotional equilibrium by shifting attention from what has been lost to what endures. And I don't mean to say this as if the four of us in any way have mastered it, but that's what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here to listen in on our conversation.
I think that starts with that question, well, what is our experience of gratitude, right? Because you've expressed both doubt and, oh, this is really helpful, right? But personally, my experience, I've tried it many times, you know, let's do a gratitude journal, right? And I can't keep up with it. Like after a third or fourth day, I'm like running out of things to put in there or throwing it aside because I'm in a hurry to do something else or I get distracted.
Well, we were joking earlier about my having bought a gratitude calendar, a tear-off each day.
Right.
And it remains on January 3rd.
That was the last time.
And then winter set in really seriously, and I just forgot about it.
Right.
Well, I had an app, and then I had to delete the app because it was useless to me, right? I wasn't keeping up with it, and it kept reminding me, you have missed today, you have 20 hours left to complete your, or whatever, you know, and I'm like, oh, shoot.
But none of this denies the importance of gratitude, as I stated earlier.
Yeah.
It's profoundly important, but it is also arduously difficult to and keep up with.
Why is that?
I haven't answered all that.
There are some things when you start to look at it, seniors and gratitude, there are some barriers. I mean, it's gratitude is hard if you're in a lot of pain. It's really hard to feel grateful when you're in pain or if you are not in the emotional space or to begin with.
Or
have the energy.
So we have to count how we spend our energy during the day.
For sure. And so gratitude, I tried to do gratitude, you know, do five things I was grateful for every morning when I got up. That lasted 2 days.
And then you ran out.
No, I didn't run out. I just thought.
We commend those who can do it.
Exactly. I don't know what, I couldn't figure out what the purpose was. It wasn't meaning anything to me. I think gratitude has to be done in a way that becomes meaningful. Maybe it's, I don't know. I used to, and I did that this today when I ran because I forgot my earphones and I didn't listen to one of our podcasts. So I was freeballing it, as they say. And I was just thinking about, I used to run outside and think about before earphones and stuff like that, and think about what I was grateful for. And first I would run, I would be grateful for the people that I had around me, and then I would run for those people that couldn't. So a friend of mine was going through cancer, actually dying of bone cancer, and I would run for her because she couldn't, and be grateful for her presence still in my life. And so I would do it that way, and that is a little more meaningful to me. And so I think gratitude takes finding the space and the way that it will work for you if we're going to practice it.
But my impression, we talked about this a few days ago too, is that there's this aspect that it has to be intentional, you know, purposeful and intentional.
Right.
And I know for me, I've always experienced or thought of the concept of gratitude is when something good happens, you respond or react, right? And you don't manufacture gratitude, you wait for good things to happen. So sort of a spontaneous thing.
Yeah.
And this talks about a different approach, your quote, Jack, that, you know, we need to somehow be intentional about pinpointing sometimes those matters or aspects of life that we can give thanks for, we can be grateful for. And sometimes that takes like discipline and it takes work. And I guess we're not used to that. I certainly, that's the impression I get from the four of us. And I think from many people in society, I guess the example I would use is because I ran for many years is you had to sort of sometimes just get up, get out there and start doing it. And then once you're into the process, you realize the benefits.
Right.
But if you wait for something to
spontaneously,
to be inspired to go, you can be there for days without
running. You can go for days without running.
I
totally get that.
So with my gratitude calendar, every day I just have to tear the damn page off.
That's right.
And read what's on there.
And read what's on there.
And keep reading it until...
Make a habit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, gratitude should be a habit, right? It is something that is part of our health care, that is part of our well-being, right? Or our wellness, you know, checklist or whatever. Gratitude should be part of that wellness checklist. You know, it's interesting, think about it.
And I think part of it is if you try to be intentional to start, it may be hard, but it can stop us from this spiral of negativity we often get ourselves into, because you start with one negative and it just gets round and round and magnifies itself. And so how do you cut it off? This sounds like it sounds to me like this is one avenue to actually, you know, break that cycle or that spiral.
Yeah. Why is it so easy to get in a spiral of negativity but not easy to get in a spiral of gratitude?
Oh, that's a good question.
Good question, yeah.
You know,
I don't know if evolutionary biologists would answer that, or you know.
How about if you just answered that?
Neurologists or so on?
Or are there studies on gratitude that might reflect them?
There's a whole science of gratitude, apparently.
Yeah.
Publications in ad nauseum.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But I think that gratitude often, we think of it as a special activity that takes intentionality. But I wonder whether gratitude isn't a worldview, something far, a way of being in the world that we're not really nurtured into being that way in the world. For example, this morning on CBC, I forget what program, but they said, well, here's something I think you should worry about. And I forget even what the topic was. And I thought, what?
You don't have enough to worry about.
I have enough. I have enough to worry about. Yeah. I don't need more.
Yeah. What was it that they were talking about? I don't remember.
It doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't matter.
Why do we pile another worry on ourselves, right?
So
why don't we pile another gratitude, piece of gratitude on ourselves, you know?
But back to what Sydney was saying about pain, which we've all experienced. I tend to think I've experienced more pain than anybody else in the world, which is, of course, not true. But when pain happens, like a sore back or recovering from an operation and you're on whatever drug to ameliorate that pain, your entire focus is on the pain. You become myopically focused. And it's so difficult to break away from that. So one of the things that has afforded me some discipline to engage with that myopic tendency is mindfulness practice, where you just notice nothing more than your breathing. And after a while, you can, after one breath after another, you can't help but be gratitude-filled for the capacity to breathe. And we know during COVID, a lot of people had trouble with breathing.
Right.
So little things like that to be thankful for.
Are you saying when you're in pain, you do that and it helps?
There are mindfulness practices dealing with pain, yes, but I don't know if it's ever worked for me or if I've ever tried it. I prefer the drugs.
That's right. Yeah. Well, they can be helpful, something to be grateful for too.
Yeah, and then you can feel the effects of those.
Yeah. But that sounds similar to what they say often, you know, the way to move yourself out of a sense of, you know, despair or hopelessness is to reach out and say, help others, you know, like move your in a very active way, move your attention toward others, whether they are in perhaps worse shape than you or not. But that whole act of, you know, and that's why they say, for example, gift giving actually gives as much of a high to people as receiving a gift, or maybe even more. Because you're moving outside of yourself, and maybe that's part of what gratitude does. It moves us outside of our pain and our lack of energy, or the wrinkles on our face, or the fact that I don't have so much hair in my head anymore. Whatever, you can maybe that's part of it. No?
It takes us out of our own self-absorption, right? Like it just. Self-absorbing kind of behaviors that we have, right?
Yeah.
That then in some ways gratitude is more about getting us out of who we are, who we tend to fall into being, right?
And yeah. I think too that we could like I was thinking today, okay, what am I grateful for? Well, I could list from the simplest to what I think is complex reasons for things that I could have gratitude for. There's no end to them. But maybe what can draw us out, and I was a little reticent with the topic that we might too quickly have solutions to the problematic that is gratitude, and I think it is a problematic, and it just offers solutions. But what came to mind anyway in that regard is that being in community with others in the end draws you, maybe not always, but it pushes you out of your little bubble of self-preoccupation and worry.
Yeah.
And that's why this is so precious to me, getting together with three of you. Even my wife, who I enjoy hearing her voice in this context, is sometimes things I couldn't have thought she was thinking.
Rolling
of eyes sometimes, you know.
We can't hear the eye rolls on
this. Yeah, that's right. No, but you know what? I agree with you, Jack, because I was thinking about, you know, when I worked on the federal election, right? And I had been so worried about our democracy, and it was just so embedded in my head as such a negative, scary kind of thought. And yet when I was there that day and I was watching the people coming in the building, and most, you know, quite excited, but not, and really almost hurrying into the building to vote. That's the other thing that sort of dawned on me. And I thought to myself, why have I let this thing sit in my head and be so negative, when this is such a beautiful spiritual moment for democracy, right?
And they were expressing gratitude.
And they were expressing gratitude that they had a chance, the ability to vote, right?
Wow.
And you're right. Like, we just sometimes get ourselves, our head is so full of ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I was at that same, working that same polling station, seeing, you know, often parents coming in with their young adult children who are voting for the first time. And kind of the excitement around the whole thing, like, this is really special, pride, You know, when you sit there and, you know, in our age, at our age, we can become very cynical about this whole thing and you got to vote, but who knows and who cares? And then to see them, that they see it as meaningful and significant, and that, I think that's a really good example of, you know, drawing us outside of ourselves and seeing where we can be grateful.
For democracy or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, in terms of seniors in particular, there are a number of reasons why gratitude is important and yet at the same time very difficult. Mm-hmm. One is decline.
Yeah.
We experience decline, all of us, in one way, or we can deny it, but we're not, you know, all the pop literature on how you can be 10 years younger tomorrow and do all these things. Well, maybe I haven't experienced it. Mm-hmm. Instead, I experienced decline. Mm-hmm. And that can create a swirl of negativity that becomes a worldview after a while.
Mm-hmm. Poor me.
Yeah.
Well, I think that for me, aging is complex. There are many things about it that are, that need managing, that need,
right.
I mean, you need to address, you know, if you've got a certain condition that you need to eat differently for, or if you've got health conditions that you need to be getting continual help for, or if you've got, you know, if you can't manage things anymore in terms of financially, or
yeah,
I mean, there are so many things that can start to derail in terms of your ability to function and feel gratitude. It's complex. It's complex growing old. It's not straightforward, I don't think. There's just many things that are... It's like I said, that our taxes after we retired were so much more complex than when we were working. Like, who can figure this out?
Well, getting from A to B becomes more complex.
That's right. I think even getting in the car becomes more complex than it used to be,
in
right?
In terms of mobility, if that's the issue.
Yeah,
for one thing. So I don't know. Gratitude for me has to be, if we're going to make a space for it, we have to come to some understanding of managing that complexity of aging, I think is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I word comes to my mind is critical thinking too. Again, because I think in our society, it a lot of what's out there, social media, media breeds discontent, and deliberately so. Like if you follow any kind of advertising, I mean, it basically is trying to tell you that what you have is not good enough and this is what you need. So there's this sense of discontent that's there. Or that if you're age 70, you don't look as spry and as youthful as this other 70-year-old or this other 40-year-old, so you need to feel discontented and get this product that will make you, you know, restore your hair, get rid of the wrinkles, whatever. And I think what is needed there is some real, I guess you could call media literacy or critical thinking to say, well, why is that out there being pushed? And why should I take this to heart? You know, I think that's a key piece that for me, you know, to sort of watch, you know, I don't know, watch some of those ads, whether I'm watching a hockey game and, you know, that brand of beer is going to make me happy and have my team score the winning goal, and when in fact that's not the case. So to think, you know, well, why should this be influencing me?
Yeah, and the prime example that jumps to mind for me, since we just went through an election, not to get overly political, but one of the parties kept on saying Canada is broken.
Yes.
And we need a change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no question that there are some things broken, and we do need some changes. But to just brainwash us into believing our country is broken. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, come on.
Yeah, and it breeds this...
Can you give me some details?
Yeah, and it breeds fear and discontent. And of a general nature where you don't even... Yeah, there are no details because often facts might speak against that. But you're running around with this anxiety in your head. Yeah, And how can you be grateful if you're anxious about everything? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. So.
Have you been making a list then of all the things that we're grateful for?
Well, it's
even though it's complex,
I was
right?
just thinking, you know, mm-hmm. it's again that complexity of aging where the things that you lose, it's maybe easier to focus on those things than on the things that we still have or are grateful for.
Right.
And again, that's a reframe or a mind shift or a change of focus. And so like your comment about that our country is broken. Our country
I
is,
didn't make the comment.
No, I know, but
no, but you yes.
but the political
it. You repeated it.
Yes.
So the reframe to that is that, you know, our country is strong and our country is mm-hmm. Is united, able to do great things, and it's that sort of what are you going to choose to believe about your world and your life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in some ways.
Yeah, and I think for me, I think about because for me, there's this faith perspective to that too, right? Because we believe, you know, that we have. That we have faith that God is with us in all aspects of our life, right? And so then, you know, why is it that I'm sitting there worrying all the time when I've got this faith perspective that I believe that God is with me, so no matter what happens, however I face that, right? And so that also, in some ways, negates the faith perspective or gets in the way of the, you know...
It's complex.
It's complex, right? You know, and so then, but then you have to remember yourself too that human beings are messy. They're messy, and mm-hmm. their lives are messy, and the things that they do are messy, and so.
I wonder too, in that same vein, whether or not gratitude and living it as a worldview has something to do with self-forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there can be so many regrets, because we've seen a lot of water under the bridge. We're all in our 70s, and we've lived a bit, and there, if you
made mistakes,
if you perseverate
mistakes,
and
exactly.
fixate on regrets,
mm-hmm.
And not let go, and that is the wonder for me, which I don't practice enough, of mindfulness, is the letting go.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to just try to, the goal is, but it's arduous, mm-hmm. of watching your thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's what vipassana means in Buddhism, watching your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then like a cloud in the sky, let it drift away
mm-hmm.
and not cling to it.
Yeah.
So the number one no-no in Buddhism is clinging.
so what
as
would
a metaphor.
What would happen, this happens to me, not every day or for that frequently, but every so often it'll just pop up some kind of mistake, accident, misspoken
experience.
Word, hurtful thing I have done. It's just there. And sometimes then so yeah, you can let it go consciously, but it'll pop up. So how do you deal with that? Would you just have to then again consciously be mindful and say, okay, that is in the past, and
reframe it,
or it's only a thought.
Yeah.
But that's a real
letting
thing.
It go.
That's a
real
thing
that
yeah.
happens. It happens to me too. And when you leave your busy active life of working and you start to reflect, which is a normal part of you know,
retirement
or it's a normal part of when you have more time to actually do that reflection, and I think that those things do come up, and they're for me they're sort of a symptom of, okay, how am I feeling about myself today? It's like it's almost like I don't know. Some days I just feel so hard on myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so I call, you know, I just they those things come up, and then I can I don't know what I'm saying. It's just it's you can be really hard on yourself for how I've been. I can be really hard on myself for how I've been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
mm-hmm. And the only thing that I can think to do is to say, to resolve, okay, I need to make sure that I don't let that happen again, and be intentional. It's that whole intentionality thing.
Yeah.
And really working at not keeping that behavior or saying that thing. I find with my grandchildren that if they're young and they take a lot of energy, and I can sometimes get tired and then I can mm-hmm. start to be short.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to be that way. Yeah. I don't want to be that way. And so I work really, I take a moment, I breathe, and I work really hard at, okay, they're exhausting me, so what can we do that's quiet that I don't have to move much?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And find strategies. I guess finding strategies to not do that again.
Yeah.
And it is forgiveness. It's just forgiving yourself for what mm-hmm. you may have done in the past and say...
You know, there's a lovely book by Robert Munsch called Mud Puddle, Mud Puddle.
Yeah.
Have you heard that one? I think it's a perfect metaphor for how I have to let go of what happened the day before or the year before or whatever. You know, the kid goes out and goes and gets really muddy in a mud puddle, right, and comes back in. Of course, the mother is somewhat a little bit frustrated, but not too much, you know. But anyway, cleans her all up, and then the next day lets her back out into that mud puddle mess, right, and does the same thing over and over again. And I think that's maybe part of the image that I have to keep reminding put back into my head, that I'll get cleaned up every day, that'll get, my slate will get wiped clean and I can just start again, right?
Start over.
And mm-hmm. in some ways, that's the gratitude moment, right?
Right,
that,
for sure.
That my slate gets cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
I might not do a good job of dealing with it, but my slate gets cleaned.
Well, and I can try again.
Yeah. And I can try again. Yeah.
And I guess reflecting, because I, you know, I was a Lutheran pastor, that often in churches they did the opposite, where they, instead of the gratitude emphasis, there was the grace emphasis, there was the guilt emphasis, mm-hmm. you know, where you fall short and reminders of where you fall short and supposedly some announcement of absolution, but often it wouldn't stick because what was still stuck in your head is all the guilt and all the embarrassment and shame. And somehow that's where, whether it's the institutional church or the whole theologies, need to really, really shift, because I think too many people walk around, even if they hear words of forgiveness and emphasis on self-forgiveness, it just doesn't sink in. So I appreciate what you shared with us, Jack, about letting this go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tend to ruminate. Now, I was thinking, do I know the meaning of the word ruminate? It comes from cows,
yes,
right?
Who chew many times
over the food. And that cycle of repetitive negative self-talk is just so diminishing of the capacity for gratitude.
Yeah. So we're not ruminant creatures, are we?
No, well, or we should be.
In our heads we are, yeah.
We ruminate on ideas, negativities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And can't let go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's harder as you get older, because it feels like there's more baggage coming along with us, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it seems to come out more when you're older. Like you worry about the decline and you worry about the negativity, because it seems like it's piled up over 70 years, you know, plus
years. You worry
years.
About what's coming next.
And what's coming
in
next.
In terms of another, I don't know what metaphor there is, a brick falling or something, or losing my sight or my hearing, which is common for mm-hmm. the elderly.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, what's next, right? What's next?
Yeah, what's the next emergency ward visit?
Although there again.
Should laugh at that. But.
Yeah, the reality check can help. You know, like every so often you see that joke where people say, as a child growing up, I thought that quicksand and anvils falling on my head were going to be a great danger, because because that's what happened in cartoons. have yet to encounter quicksand.
Yes, we have, but not metaphorically. We have, right?
Well, okay, metaphorically, yes,
we've experienced some quicksand, right?
But there again, you know, I think that's it—the mindfulness, the reality check, the intentionality. Those aspects are all pretty critical. So.
Yeah.
And mindfulness, I think part of the negative take on mindfulness is that it's some kind of Eastern esoteric practice.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Meditation, right?
Yeah.
But actually, it can be a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It can be just
a statement, a mantra.
Saying thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To whom or whatever you see as a listening presence.
Yeah. Or it can be just a moment of admiring, because I love trees, the tree that is spectacularly shaped in the schoolyard every time I walk past.
And the green leaves that are about to come.
Yeah, and the buds showing. And
taking those moments.
Yeah, like yesterday we had the opportunity to walk through a number of different forests at different parks. And walking through the one at Birds Hill, I thought, this is nice. This is really nice. I realized I hadn't done that for a while. Need to do this more often.
Mm-hmm.
And
the forest bathing,
they call it, right?
Yeah, the forest bathing.
Yeah. And maybe for everyone that doesn't work, but to find where that is so you can, you know,
express gratitude.
Yeah, but also, you know, find sense of contentment and peace and emotional spiritual well-being. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because it is different for all people. And maybe that's part of it, is there has to be some exploration of that. Because I know when we started, we all sort of reflected how the journals and the calendar really, really aren't quite doing it yet.
Well, so, and it does it become something that you don't put pressure on yourself to do, but that you find the moments that are that present themselves and appreciate them.
Yeah. And just be.
And just be. Yeah.
And just be.
Just be, yes.
I think that's somehow part of that, right? That
we've talked about that before, how just being is so hard and yet so gratifying when you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe the expectation is that when you're older, just being should be easier, but it's aging is complex.
And it's different for everybody, right? Our life experiences present us with a different perspective, right? That things are I guess maybe that's part of what I was thinking about in terms of being an elder and thinking about death coming close. I've experienced so much death and dying in my life, right? From the time I was 15 years old, I've lost somebody quite regularly throughout my life. And so I'm sort of at the stage where I don't think about that death so much anymore. You know, it's like, well, survived that death. Okay. Mm. And then the next one comes, and then the next one comes, and the next one comes, right? And so then in those moments where I sit in the forest, then I can remember those people, and I can remember things that are really important about those people without sort of, you know, focusing it totally on their death, but totally on
who they were
and what they brought to my life, right? And how I can, you know, use that as part of who I am and just be, right? Mm-hmm. Who I am. Yeah.
Yeah, our society doesn't put to the fore anyway, though it probably exists, valuing of just being, because we're a doing culture, a success-oriented culture, a work culture.
Productivity.
Protestant work ethic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the way to salvation is to keep working. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly we're retired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's really no work to be done. So there's a blessed opportunity for just being.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that experience of pure being and gratitude for being alive is hampered by our minds.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Because we ruminate again. Cycle of thoughts over. They say that something like 90% of what you think in any particular day, you in your mind, you're repeating exactly what happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's over and over and over again, the same thoughts.
We've talked about that before. So what do you do, Jack, when that's happening to you?
I breathe. Really, just inhalation and exhalation and say, that works.
Mm-hmm.
My body is functioning right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds so simplistic, because that's what they say about meditation. It's so simple. but it's not easy.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
that's why practitioners will spend a lifetime just breathing and trying not to be carried away by their thoughts. Mm-hmm. And realizing, I can say it, it's theoretically, that our thoughts are not real.
Or not all who we are either.
And not all who we are, but they're also not real.
Yeah. But I'm struggling with that because...
The thought and the reality are not the same.
But so how, if your thoughts are not real, how do you know what reality is, Jack? Like, I'm struggling with this whole concept of...
Well, we could get philosophical because in Buddhism...
How do you do it? No, I don't want to hear about Buddhism anymore.
How do I do what?
How do you get out of your thoughts? And how do you know what's real then?
Okay.
If your thoughts aren't real, then what is real? I don't want philosophical.
Well, okay, but I got to tell you what I practice, and that is body attention. Mm-hmm. So the breath is one anchor to stop the swirl of ruminating thoughts.
Interesting.
Follow it in, and you can notice where it comes in. You can focus on your nose. You can focus on your mouth if you're a mouth breather. And those ruminating thoughts, they drift away.
Mm. They're not really work?
I do it at night, every night.
Oh, interesting.
I lay down and I feel my fingertips.
That's what you're doing.
And touch the sheets.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
One exercise is called yoga nidra. Again, yoga sounds esoteric, but really it's... What she does in leading you to a sleep meditation is get you to follow your breath initially, and then she says, now without moving, just feel the sensation of your right index finger and of your middle finger and of your ring finger on your right hand and of your little finger. You know, just sensing that you've got those fingers, and then of the palm of your hand, of the back of your hand, and on to the left hand, to the feet, and pretty soon you're out because the ruminating has stopped. But not always.
No, right? But you've reframed, you've refocused.
Totally reframed, you're in your body.
Yeah.
Mm. I was just going to say that one of the ways that I stop that ruminating is going for a walk, or my go-to, or doing something, like immediately doing something and being physically active, being physically doing something. And it completely distracts me from all that.
So absolutely.
You're doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's only because I can't run anymore.
Go in your body.
I used to run my anxiety away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until I could almost drop. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're focusing on the movement of your body and you're huffing and puffing with your breath. And the perseverating thoughts, the repeated ruminating thoughts, drift away. Mm-hmm. Hmm. But none of this is simple solutions.
No. What about you, Lane? What works for
you? If we're talking about going to bed, I just lay in the bed and I am gone.
The ruminating thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, the ruminating thoughts, yeah. Yes. I get them so that they're at a frenzied level, actually, and become...
And how do you deal with them?
Yeah, I have to force myself to get quiet and remove myself from the situation and lay down. And
what is your mind doing when you do that?
It just keeps going. But it jumps to something else. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I would say that I have some ADHD tendencies, and that would be something that I would do. I just move on to the next subject to try to get my head out of whatever thing.
But eventually you fall asleep.
Oh, I can fall asleep at the drop of a hat.
Well, sleep, that's a blessing.
This going to bed at night is nothing, but I mean for me to do, to lay there and do that. But it's in the middle of the night when
you wake up.
I wake up, and then those thoughts are going.
And then it starts again.
Yeah, and what I do remember most about when the kids were little was I would sit down and I would write. I had a writing pad next to me, and I would write down those thoughts to get them out of my head, right? Or a task was sort of working on my head. I would do that. And then, you know, as they the kids aged and didn't require as much energy, then I would sit and read. I would read, you know, something that was mm-hmm. considered fluff and that would put you to sleep.
And escape, yeah,
and fall asleep. Mm. What about you? Can you?
Well, a bit like, I think like Jack, often it was exercise, running, you know.
Oh, right.
We're refocusing out of your mind because now you've got to focus on, and whether it was running or perhaps even, you know, working out in the gym, now you've got to focus on this because if you don't, you're going to drop the weight on your head. So
yeah,
that kind of thing, that helped. Now, there again, as you're aging, you're perhaps have less energy to do that. So you still have to find others. The other one is going, like Sydney said, going for walks, especially, you know, in a quiet area. That's very helpful. So I think some of it is just a reframing, and that, again, moves us hopefully from ruminating and self-deprecation into gratitude, or at least into appreciation for who we are and what we have, and into being, yeah.
I think that's probably the way that we could end this conversation, but I also think that I wonder how many people are out there are saying, okay, well, what are you guys grateful for then? I mean, if you wanted to talk about gratitude, what are some of those things that you might be thinking about? And
Another podcast,
I think.
Well, I was thinking as we were talking about sleep and how we get to sleep, we could have a podcast entitled The Elderly and Sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Or no sleep, right?
Well, I was going to say, too, like for sleep, to get to sleep, but, you know, since I've lost my balance to a significant degree, or at least for me it was significant, I can still walk, mm-hmm. but I have trouble running, was a nighttime routine would be to grab a sleeping pill.
Oh.
Which induced sleep. And I'm off that because they said, well, my doctor rightfully said, you know, as an elderly person, you probably shouldn't be on a sleeping pill because it affects balance.
Yeah.
Also diminishes respiration.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, and I'm on a CPAP machine already, so.
Yeah.
So no more sleeping pills for me. So I have to rely on something like contemplative practice.
Which is probably much healthier. In the
well,
end, yeah,
I more don't beneficial. Know. Sometimes yeah. I regret the sleeping pills were so good. They worked.
He loves his drugs.
I love my drugs.
Yeah.
So maybe with that, we'll close and.
Well, I'm grateful for the people that might listen to this and.
Yes, thank
that's
you.
True too.
And appreciate what we're trying to say and have something that they.
Yeah, we'd be happy to hear their thoughts on. The conversation around
how
yeah
I'm
yeah at
myself.
The end of the podcast there's a little spiel there that tells you where about our
to give feedback
to give feedback and so good. Please listen further to find out how you can get a hold of us.
So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RRS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design. As well, thanks to Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input, and we appreciate the support of all of our families in this endeavor for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love. Our email is foursseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniors in the building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.